and know. If you have your Bibles, turn to Psalm 46. We're going to focus on verse 10, but really look at the whole chapter and setting up that verse. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. As we look at these verses tonight, we want to see three things. We want to see the problem. We want to see that the earth is shaken, the mountains are moved, and the sea is roaring. Then we want to see the prescription, be still. And finally, we want to see the prize, know God. As we look at these verses, let's begin with the problem. The psalm begins with a problem, begins with the earth in chaos and turmoil. I want you to look at some verses with me, beginning in verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed and the mountains, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling. So we see as this chapter opens that there is trouble, there is fear, there's all kinds of chaos going on. The earth is being moved, the mountains are being moved, the sea is roaring and coming out against them. We see this kind of chaos and noise. Then when you go down later in the chapter, I want you to see that we have political upheaval as well. Look at verse 6. The nations raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. So we see nations raging. We see kingdoms being divided and moved. We see all of this going on. We see the problem. Now, I'm convinced that the chaos and the noise is from the devil. And I want to explain that to you. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4, the Bible says that the God of this world has blinded minds. He tries to get minds to be blinded to the light of the gospel of God. He tries to create disturbances. He tries to create distractions. He tries to create problems in our lives so that we take our eyes off of God. He wants things to be noisy so we don't hear God. He wants things to be chaotic so that we don't see God. He wants to create all of these disturbances in our lives to get our eyes and our ears off of God. Let me give you an illustration from football. I like football, especially college football. I enjoy watching the games, and I enjoy hearing the commentators talk about the game, talking about what the offense is trying to do and how the defense is reacting. I like to hear them talk about how that the play was set up and developed. I like to hear them talk about what went wrong or what went right with the play. Sometimes in describing the quarterback, the quarterback maybe had an easy throw and he didn't make the throw. He threw it high, he threw it low. Somehow he was off in his timing with the receiver. And so they'll diagnose the play. And one of the diagnoses that they sometimes give is they'll say that the quarterback had happy feet. That means that the quarterback was shifting on his feet. The quarterback was nervous. He was anxious. He was afraid that the protection was breaking down. He was afraid that he was going to get hit from the blind side. He was afraid that he was going to get laid out on the field. And so because of that, he rushed the throw. Because of that, he didn't follow through with the throw. Because of that, he didn't make the completion that was right there to be made. Because of all the chaos going on around him, he couldn't focus. I want to suggest to you that the devil knows how to create chaos, how to create noise in our lives so that we don't see God and we don't hear God, so that we get happy feet, so that we get anxious, so that we're afraid that we're about to be hit from the blind side. We're going to get blindsided by something. We're going to get laid out by that linebacker who's running free. We're going to get blitzed by that safety. We see all of this going on around us and we can't stay focused on what we're supposed to be focused on. Our focus is drawn away from that. He's a master at doing that. We see it many times in the scriptures where that very thing happens. In Matthew chapter 14 and verse 30, you remember that Jesus is walking on the water. And Peter makes the request that he might come to the Lord on the water. And the Lord grants that request and Peter steps out of the boat and Peter is walking on the water. An amazing thing. Only two men ever did that, Jesus and Peter. And Peter's walking on the water. But you remember what happened? You remember that he saw the wind and he saw the waves and he became afraid. He took his eyes off of Jesus and he started to sink. He got anxious. He got worried. His focus shifted from where it should have been to these other things. The devil's a master at getting our eyes off of God and on life. Getting our ears off of listening to God and getting us to listen to the negative voices in our head, the negative things being said in our world. He's a master at doing that. That's the problem that we're dealing with. And we've got to be careful not to develop happy feet. Now, what happens in Exodus chapter 14 is very close to what's happening in Psalm 46. That's another one of the times in the scriptures where we're told to be still. In that chapter, remember, the children of Israel had made it out of Egypt. They were standing at the Red Sea. They were preparing to cross that Red Sea, but Pharaoh and his army had caught up with them. You can imagine, they're hemmed in by the sea, and here comes Pharaoh and his army. They can hear the clang of the chariots. They can see the dust cloud coming their way. They know what's about to happen to them. Chaos, noise, taking their eyes off of God. Now, if they had really thought about it, they would have thought, you know, God brought 10 plagues on the land of Egypt. And through those 10 plagues, God broke Pharaoh's will. Through those 10 plagues, God convinced Pharaoh it was in his best interest to let them go. God had protected them, and he had delivered Pharaoh to all of these punishments. They should have been thinking about that, but they weren't thinking about that. They should have looked down at all the treasure they had with them. God had allowed them to spoil the Egyptians. They were walking out of Egypt with all of these riches that their neighbors, that those around them had given them. Because they wanted them to go. They should have said, our firstborn's still with us. All the firstborn of Egypt are dead. But the devil didn't want them to see God and to know God and to listen to God. And so the devil said, let me shift their focus. Let me get them to focus on Pharaoh and the army and what's about to happen to them. That's the problem we see in this context. We see that same thing being said in Psalm chapter 2. In this psalm where we read in verse 6 that the nations raged and the kingdoms were moved, how does Psalm 2 verses 1 and 2 begin? The nations are raging. There's political chaos. There's all of this upheaval that's going on in society. That gets your eyes off of God. That's the problem. But now that we've seen the problem, I want us to spend the majority of the time on the prescription. On how do we meet that problem? How do we deal with the fact that we live in this world that's in a state of chaos, that we are constantly bombarded by all of these things that are happening and we become worried and afraid? We take our eyes off of God. How do we deal with that? Well, the answer that the Bible gives us, the prescription that the great physician gives us, is be still. That's the last thing we want to do. We want to get those happy feet. We think, I've got to run for it. I'm not going to be able to stay where I am very long. They're going to get to me. That's the fear. But God's prescription is, be still. There are three times in the scriptures where God tells people to be still. One is here, Psalm 46:10. The other is Exodus 14 and verse 13, where God says, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And the third one is in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 18, where Naomi says to Ruth, sit still and see how the matter will come out. Now, each of those situations is unique and different in a little way, but all of them are giving the same advice. Be still, stand still, sit still. Stillness is prescribed in every one of those situations. Let's start with Ruth. Ruth was a Moabitess. She came home with Naomi. And in coming home with Naomi, she had left everything she knew behind. She had placed herself in a very difficult position, a position being a stranger in the land of Israel, being with her mother-in-law and having the responsibility of providing for her mother-in-law. And so she had gone out into the fields, a very dangerous thing to do. She had happened to come into the field of Boaz, and Boaz had taken notice of her, and Boaz had provided for her. He had even instructed his workers, let her glean wherever she wants to, not just the corners of the field. She can go in the middle of the field if she wants to. You drop some on purpose so that she can find it and pick it up. He had taken great care of her. And Naomi had noticed that. And Naomi had said to Ruth, Boaz, he's a near kinsman. He may be the answer to our problems. This is what I want you to do. I want you to take a bath. I want you to get all dressed up. I want you to go. He's going to be sleeping by his pile of wheat because he had to guard it. He had picked it, but somebody had come and steal it, and so you would sleep on that stack of grain. And that's where he'll be, Naomi said. You get dressed up, and you go there, and you place yourself in close proximity to him. And Ruth laid at his feet, and evidently she uncovered his feet because sometime during the night, he's moving around, shifting a little bit. Probably his feet got cold. He bumps into Ruth. He's startled. They have this conversation, and Ruth says, "Take me under your wings. Be my kinsman redeemer. Redeem me. Redeem Naomi. Redeem our future." And he's going to do that, but he explains to Ruth, "There's one closer than me, and he gets the first opportunity, but I'm going to do what I can do." And so he sends Ruth back to Naomi with a lot of grain. He's letting her know, "I love you and I want to redeem you, but I'm going to do things God's way, and there's one closer to me, and so we've got to work that situation out." And so Naomi says, "Sit still and see how the matter will come out." That must have been really hard. Your whole life was in the balance. Your whole future was in the balance. Are we going to survive? Are we going to make it? What's going to happen? What's he going to say? What's the other guy going to say? How is this? Just sit still and see how it comes out. Exodus 14, they're at the Red Sea. They've been delivered from Egypt, but they're not out of the land yet. They haven't crossed the Red Sea yet. And Pharaoh has changed his mind as he had done 10 times before. And now he's coming after them. And they're there and they can just see the future being wiped away. They're anxious and they're fearful. They even begin to complain. "Why did you bring us all the way out here in the wilderness just for us to die? We could have died in Egypt. We told you we'll just stay in Egypt and serve. And you kept saying, no, no, no. You need to be free. God is setting you free. You need to follow me out of the land. You'd said all that. Why didn't you just let us remain in the land? Being a slave is better than being dead." That's how they're feeling. Stand still and see the salvation of God. In that context, there's even more that's said, because in that context, they're told to be quiet. Be still and be quiet. I want you to understand that God's prescription for all the chaos of our lives, all the upheaval in our world, is sit still, stand still, and be quiet. Now, when we think about that prescription as it appears in Psalm 46, that's easier said than done. Most of us have a lot of trouble being still and being quiet. We have a lot of trouble believing in our protection. We have a lot of trouble focusing on what we're supposed to be focused on, believing that others are going to do what they're supposed to do and other things are going to be taken care of. We get anxious and we want to run. But what is being said in this chapter is be still. That's God's prescription. It's interesting when we think about God that God often points out still things to us. For example, in Psalm 23 in verses 1 and 2, I want you to think about what God is saying in that chapter. And I want you to think about the fact that the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Think about that. Still waters. Sheep are afraid of moving waters. They got a big furry coat on them. And if they were to fall in, they would get soaked with that water. They would sink to the bottom and it'd be over. They don't like running water. They like still water. And so God says, I'll lead you by still water. I'll make sure that you're made comfortable. Still waters. We think about Mark 4 and verse 39. Where there's a great storm on the sea, and the disciples, they're fearful for their lives. They finally wake Jesus up. They ask you, "Master, don't you care about us? Don't you care about what we're going through, what's happening to us?" You know what Jesus said? "Peace, be still." He called for stillness. That storm was raging one moment, and it was as smooth and still as glass the next. How did that happen? Because God is a God who can make things still, who can make the waters still. I want you to look at 1 Kings chapter 19. And I want you to look at what occurs in this situation with Elijah. He stood up to the prophets of Baal. He's been victorious, but then Jezebel threatened him. And she said, your life's going to be like their life by this time tomorrow. And he takes off running into the wilderness. He sits underneath this juniper tree, and he's thinking, I'm the only one that's left. The chaos has finally gotten to him. Jezebel has threatened his life. He knows she means business. She's running free. She's broken loose on the edge. He knows she's fixing to take me down. He runs away. But I want you to look at 1 Kings chapter 19, because it's interesting where God appears to Elijah. It's not maybe in the way or in the circumstances that we would think. Look in verse 11. Then he said, this is God saying to Elijah, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountain and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. Then after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. That's where God is. Still, small voice. Elijah, what are you doing here? Elijah, did you not see what just happened on the mountain? They built an altar, nothing happened. You built an altar, I sent fire. Fire, it devoured the sacrifice, it devoured the altar, it devoured the rocks, it licked up all the water. The only thing that was left was a black spot on the ground. Elijah, what are you doing out here? Elijah, if I could help you 450-1... I can help you against Jezebel. I've got your blind side, Elijah. You just do what I tell you to do. You don't worry about Jezebel. I got her. I'll deal with her. You be still. You be quiet. You trust in me. That was God's prescription. I think that's God's prescription for us today. Be still and be quiet. Are you ever traveling on the highway and you see one of these flashing signs on the side of the road that says, this is the speed limit, and this is how fast you're going? I always feel like I'm not going fast enough unless it really blinks at me. You know, if it really blinks at me, well, I must have been going fast enough, right? And it'll flash that will slow down, slow down. I'm convinced that God's message to us today is, you need to slow down. You're going too fast. You're running for it when you ought to be throwing it. You're letting the chaos, you're letting the noise give you happy feet. Be still, God says. Slow down. Be quiet. I got this. I can handle this. Just trust me. And when we think about that, think about Luke chapter 10. And I want you to see in Luke chapter 10, verses 41 and 42, that Jesus is having this discussion with Martha. Now, Martha is entertaining Jesus. She's showing great hospitality as she's done on so many other occasions. She wants everything to be just right, and she's running about. And she's frustrated because Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus while she runs about and gets everything done. She wants Jesus to tell Mary to get up and help. And Jesus says, Martha, Martha. One of a number of occasions in the Bible where a double name is used. Almost always a bad thing when a double name is used. It's a bad thing here because Martha is not focused on the right things. Jesus says, you're troubled about many things. You see, you've let the commotion, you've let the upheaval, you've let what needs to be done take your focus off of me. You've let all the noise of life get in your head, and Mary's sitting here still listening to me, but you're running around. Mary has chosen the needed thing. She's chosen the best thing. And let me point this out to you. Be still and know God. You have to be still to know God. You have to be willing to stand still. You have to be willing to sit still to know God. It's hard to know God when you're running about. Hard to know God when all this noise is in your head. You know, worship is designed to be a time where we get out of the world, we sit on a pew, we get still, things get quiet, and we come to know God. What a wonderful blessing worship is. Now, that's not to say we can't do that at other times during the week in our lives. There's certainly times where we ought to get away, as Jesus said. Leave the crowd. Go find a place to pray. Go find a place to study. Go find a place like Nathaniel where we can meditate on God's word. Go find those places of peace and quiet so that we can get to know God.
When you think about Martha here, Martha, she's imitating, she's illustrating the way we run about our days, trying to get everything done and missing the great moments, the great opportunities to get to know God. And when we think about these verses, Isaiah 30:15 is a great verse that talks about having confidence and having quietness. Confidence is this stillness, trusting God. This quietness is listening and letting God talk rather than us do all the talking. Habakkuk 2 and verse 20 says, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. We live in a noisy world, and sometimes we convince ourselves that we can study in the midst of that noise. And we do our best to block out things around us. I know this generation is better than the last generation in the sense that the last generation had to have everything quiet to be able to study or do something. This generation has learned very few quiet times in life. I've got to learn how to deal with the noise. But still, there is something to be said for getting out of the wind for a little while, so that you can get things back in order again. Acts chapter 27, Paul is on this voyage to Rome, and they've been fighting the wind and fighting the wind and fighting the wind, and it wears you down. It just beats on you. But occasionally, they're able to sail under an island. They're able to get out of the wind for just a few minutes to get things back in order again. That's what Sundays are for. That's what Wednesdays are for. There are occasions for us to be still. There are occasions for us to be quiet. There are occasions for us to come to know God, to get out of the world, to get out of the chaos and the noise for a little while. We better take advantage of every one of those opportunities. That's what we're talking about when we talk about being still. Now, we live in a hectic and busy world, noisy world, you know that. Let me explain kind of how we got to where we are. In 1370, there was the first public clock. It was posted in Cologne, Germany, put up in Cologne, Germany. And then people began to look to that clock, and that clock began to cause them anxiety. They began to think, oh, it's later than I thought it was. I got to get this done and this done and this done. And it began to push their lives. How many times do we look at our watch, look at our phone every day, checking the time, checking? We're driven by it. It creates a lot of anxiety in our lives because we realize time is ticking away. I got so much that's got to be done. I haven't gotten everything done today that I wanted to get done, that I need to get done. And we're stressed out by it. Think about what happened in 1879. The light bulb was invented. Do you realize that prior to that time, the average American slept 11 hours a night? We sometimes go back and read the older works and we think, how were they able to do this, and how were they able to do that? And they're getting up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty easy to get up at 3 or 4 when you went to bed at 7. When you went to bed when the sun went down, then you could get a lot of hours in before the sun came back up again. There's a lot of sleep there. When's the last time you got 11 hours? When's the last time I got 11 hours? I'm fortunate. I feel like if I get 6 hours. I did really well last night. I got 6 hours. But that's, again, a part of our world, because when the light bulb came along, Now we can work past sundown. Now we can work into the night. And many of us do. And then, in 2007, the iPhone came out. Of all the days in the history of humanity, that may be the event that most changed our world. Not because I like the iPhone. I really don't like phones at all. But because that has had such an effect upon this generation. And it's had such an effect upon our quiet and still time. Let me explain how that is. You say, preacher, I got a Bible on my phone. And that sounds great, doesn't it? I got a Bible on my iPad. You see, preacher, I got the Bible with me all the time because it's right here on my phone. And I can take out my phone anytime I want to and read it and study it. Yeah, you can. Is that what you do when you get a moment when you're not doing something else? You open up your phone, you open up the Bible, and you begin to read and study the Bible. Let's say that that's what you do. You don't go visit Facebook, you don't get on Instagram, you don't get on anything else. You go to the Bible when you get a quiet moment, a still moment. You open it up. You know what happens as soon as you open it up? You get a message. Somebody sent you a message. Somebody reacted to something. Something's happening and you've been alerted to it. And before you know it, you're out chasing whatever that was. You're not on the Bible anymore. You're not studying the Bible anymore, because what did Satan do? Satan said, can't have him focused on God. I got to get him focused on everything that's happening around him. I've got to get him to listen to everything that's occurring around him instead of listening to God. Now, I'm not saying every text is from the devil. Some of them are from your wife. Some of them are from people that love you and care about you. They're not all from the devil. I'm just saying that life tends to get our focus on it rather than on God. And that's a problem. That's a dangerous thing. Now, I want you to think with me about the iPhone. You know, the average American is on his iPhone 2.5 hours every day. I know people own it a lot more than that. That's the average. So the ones who don't get on it at all get blended in with those that are on it all the time. Do you realize that we touch our iPhones on average 2,716 times every day? Swipe, touch, move, this, whatever. We're on that phone, we're touching that phone. I get a quiet moment, I get a still moment. I don't use that for God. I use that for something else. I fill those moments of my life, the only moments I have seemingly left for God, and I fill them with something else. That's the problem that's occurring in our world. Do you realize that since the iPhone came out, our attention span has gone from 12 seconds to 8 seconds? We can't focus anymore. We're so used to just things moving very quickly, and they have to move quickly to keep our focus and keep our attention. You know, a goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds. We have less of an attention span than a goldfish does. He can focus on things better than we can. How sad that is. That's our world, and we've got to deal with that. Someone has said that if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. I think that's true. You see, if he can get you busy, then what he'll do is he'll push God, he'll push faith, he'll push it to the edges of your life. You won't deny the faith, you won't completely leave God, but God will get pushed to the edges because now you're busy with other things. God's still in your life, but he's not at the center of your life anymore. He's been relegated to the edges of your life. The devil does that. 1 Kings 20 and verse 40 talks about a man who was given the responsibility of guarding a prisoner, and the prisoner got away. And the king was asking him, and he said, while your servant was busy here and there, he was gone. We get busy here and there, and we lose the opportunities that we have to be with God. Someone has said, you can't live the abundant life with a tired soul. Jesus wants us to have the abundant life, but to have the abundant life, we have to be still long enough and quiet long enough to come to know God and to take advantage of the blessings that God has given to us. Now let's talk about the prize. The prize is be still and know God. If we will be still, we can really come to know God. We can develop a relationship with God that we've never had before. A relationship that where we are walking with God like Enoch did. Where we're the friend of God like Abraham was. Where we're face to face, if you will, with God. We're spending a lot of time with him like Moses did. We're in his presence. And that presence is coming off on us. We come to know God. Now when I say that we come to know God, I mean that we come to develop this relationship with God that few people on earth ever have. But every person can have. It's available to every one of us here, but a few of us will be the only ones to enjoy it, because we'll be the only ones that will slow down enough, stop long enough, be quiet long enough to get to know God. I want you to look at this psalm, and I want you to get to know the God of this psalm and what a blessing it is to get to know him, to come to know him. I want you to look at what it says about God. First of all, we read of the protection of God. God is our refuge. He's our refuge. Look at verse 7. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Look at verse 11. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. I have a refuge. I have a storm shelter. I have a place where I can go when the world gets out of control. I have a place where I can get out of the wind. I have a place where I can be in the presence of God. God wraps his arms around me. He's my refuge. I love Deuteronomy 33 and verse 27. God is our refuge. And underneath are the everlasting arms God has me in his arms, everlasting arms. He's protecting me. That's the protection of God. Look and see the power of God. Verse 1 says, God is our refuge and strength. He's our strength. I don't have to depend on my strength. I have his strength. If God be for us, who can be against us? Romans 8:31. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. Ephesians 6:10. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of his mind. God, in the power of God, I come to know that. I come to know the providence of God. Look at verse 1, the last part. A very present help in trouble. He's a help in trouble. Look at verse 5. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her just at the break of dawn. God is my helper. I won't fear what man does to me. Hebrews 13 and verse 6. I want you to think about the fact that we come to know the presence of God. I want you to look down at verse 5. It says, God is in the midst of her. God is in the midst of her. Is God in the midst of you? Is God in you? Or is God outside of you? Where is God? Have you made a place for him in your life, in your heart? Is he in the midst of you? Because if he's in the midst of you, you know, when those disciples were afraid in the boat in that storm, you know what made the difference? The Lord was in the boat with them. He was in the midst of them. If they had been in that storm by themselves without the Lord, they're in a lot of trouble. But because the Lord's in the boat, they're not in so much trouble. Because he can still the storm. He can stop the waves. He has the power to do that. That's his providential care and help that he'll give to them. That's his presence in their lives. Look at verse 7. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Look at verse 11. The Lord of hosts is with us. He's with us. I'm not alone. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. We're to be content with what we have, for he's promised us, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. God's with us. That makes all the difference. We can be still because we know that God is in our midst. God is with us. In Matthew 28 and verse 20, Jesus says, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world. I'm going to be with you. I'm not leaving you. That's the presence of God. Then we see the peace of God. I want you to look at verse 9. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariot in the fire. God brings peace. He brings peace into our lives. If we'll be still and come to know him, we come to know his peace. Is that not what is being said in Philippians chapter 4 and verses 6 and 7, where Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God that passeth all understanding will keep your hearts and minds. God's going to give you peace in the midst of all the chaos of the world. If you'll just be still and come to know God, you'll enjoy that peace. Isaiah said it this way. I think it's beautiful. Isaiah 26 and verse 3. God gives perfect peace to those who have their minds stayed on him. They have their minds focused on God. They enjoy perfect peace. God brings them peace. You know, statistics tell us that 39% of Americans feel more anxious than they did just a year ago. Things aren't trending in the right direction. Things are trending in the wrong. Do you feel better about the economy? Do you feel better about the wars that are going on around the world? Do you feel better about our borders? Do you feel better about? I mean, there's a lot going on in our world. There's a lot to create stress for us. What is God saying? God's saying, be still and know that I'm your protection. I'm your power. My presence is in your life. My peace will keep you. God says, no matter what the defense throws at you, you stay still. You stay, plant your feet. God says, I'll protect you. You do what I've asked you to do. Be still and know. Again, that's easier said than done, because our world and the God of this world is doing everything he can to get you to have happy feet, to get you to worry, to get you to take your focus off of God, to think you've got to do it on your own. No, you don't. No, you don't. Be still and know God, and you'll be amazed at how things clear up just in an instant. That storm, still. Jezebel, dealt with. Pharaoh and his army, dead on the seashore. Why? They stood still. They sat still. They were still. And they trusted God, and God handled it. God hasn't lost any of his power. He didn't work in the miraculous way he did in ages past, but he still works. He's still there. He still has all the power that he ever had. And providentially, he can bring it to bear against you. And we know that all things work together for good to those that love God, those that are called according to his purpose. God will work it together. He'll work it together for good. If you'll just be still and let God work, let God handle it, life is going to turn out okay. I don't mean all the noise will go away. I don't mean all the chaos will be quiet. But you can live in perfect peace because of your relationship with God. Thank you for your attention tonight.